are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, October 24, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA, and the Raphael Conference Room at the Bellagio Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm here for the 2019 Mass Torts Conference. On the program today, Trump's alibis fall apart. The Ukrainians knew the funds were withheld, and records show that Trump's actually been looking to cut anti-corporate funding. Meanwhile, after denial comes the anger. Brooks Brothers riot part dumb. Rudy Giuliani lawyers up, and speaking of the stages of grief, Zuckerberg's going to have to let go of crypto dreams he's had, as he was destroyed in congressional hearings yesterday. Supreme Court lets the Michigan GOP gerrymander stand, reverses the Sixth Circuit. ICE cover-up, U.S. immigration officers destroyed key surveillance footage of a transgender woman who died in ICE custody. And the chief operating officer of the Office of Federal Student Loans quits in disgust and says, forgive almost all of it. Meanwhile, Trump lifts a six-day-old sanctions on Turkey as ethnic cleansing begins. And the 3% Titan Klobuchar qualifies for the November 20 debate. Lastly, Elijah Cummings to lie in state in the U.S. Capitol today. All this and more on today's program. Folks, I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada, talking to trial lawyers. I have one with me now. Just got to organize one thing. Scott, just give me 10 minutes. Okay. So joining me now is Chris Tietze. He is a... are you of counsel of Levin Papantonio?
I am.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, try again.
No, I am of counsel. Thank you very much for having me.
And you have been working on the Johnson & Johnson talcum powder case? Tell me, just give me the update. What's happening with that?
Well, just on Friday, Sam, the FDA announced that there was that their independent laboratory had found the evidence of asbestos in samples of talcum powder products that Johnson & Johnson had marketed. They pulled the sample that they tested off the shelves, so it's the kind of bottle that you or somebody else might purchase at the store. And as a result, J&J has withdrawn a lot of specific lot of talcum powder products. I really have to say that this comes on the heels of 40 years of denying that there is any potential problem with their flagship product.
Now, so wait a second. So my understanding is that the issue with the talcum powder in the past has not been necessarily asbestos, but it functions like asbestos on some level, or is it that it's a carcinogen?
Well, I think you have to back up a little bit, Sam, and talk a little bit about that this is a product that people pull from the ground. I mean, you go into a mine. When you say you're mining for talc, you're really pulling out of the ground talc and everything that comes with it.
Right.
So it is typically the case that there's asbestos close by. There's nickel. There's chromium. You know, there are certain tests that they instituted to try and minimized the amount of these known carcinogens in talcum powder in the 1970s, but they really never updated their testing protocol. And so there's always been a concern that the talc you buy is not pure talc. Against that backdrop, for 40 years, you've had researcher after researcher after researcher from Harvard, from different countries, who have found that there's an increased risk for women using talc in ovarian cancer.
Wow. And now, my understanding is, has that case been resolved? I mean, or where what's the status? I mean, of this ongoing sort of, I guess, claim. I mean, where are we in terms of?
Well, where we are right now is there have been some trials in various state courts around the country, Missouri, California, Georgia. Most of the cases, for legal jurisdictional reasons, are pending in the United States District Court for the District of New Jersey. And the judge right now is considering issues relating to whether or not the case can proceed to trial in federal court. So we're kind of at the point where I think a lot of the scientific questions are going to be addressed by the court.
And those scientific questions are, to what extent are the carcinogens in the powder? To what extent has did Johnson & Johnson have the ability to know that the testing they did in 1970s is not up to par for today's ability to test? And at what point, I guess, you know, over the course of this past 40 years, should they have retested with new technology and new ability to assess what elements in there might be carcinogenic?
You know, that's really one of the questions. The bigger question is whether or not the use of these powders by women for hygiene are capable of causing ovarian cancer. There are a lot of aspects to that. And, you know, what I think is really important is that regulators are starting to catch up with what scientists have known for many years. There were recently hearings in the House of Representatives on the question of whether or not this product is really safe. The Canadian FDA has concluded that there is, that it can cause ovarian cancer in some women. The FDA now seems to be starting to step into the breach. What is important is that the judge will consider all of this and let us know whether or not we can proceed to trial on the question of whether talc causes ovarian cancer. The presence of asbestos is part of it. I liken it to a cigarette. You know, we all say cigarettes cause ovarian cause lung cancer. We don't worry about whether a cigarette contains 500 carcinogens.
Right.
Talcum powder contains asbestos, contains fibrous talc, which acts like asbestos, nickel, chromium, all kinds of things that are potential mechanisms. Plausible mechanisms for causing ovarian cancer.
For you to get a, for the plaintiffs to win in this case, what do they have to prove about what Johnson & Johnson did or did not know?
Well, okay, so now we're going to the question of what they knew and when they knew it. How do I say this in a way that I think we have to step back and look at the product we're dealing with here. This is a product, candidly, when I first started the case, I scratched my head and said, this is baby powder. If you can't trust baby powder, what
right.
can you trust? I mean, if you have a child, you leave the hospital with you know, your child, a blanket, and baby powder. That's what you leave the hospital with. So I think there's a general reluctance of people to understand that even something like baby powder can be a problem. The first human study on the question was in 1982. There have been close to 40 studies conducted since 1982, all of which showing that women who use talcum powder products, Johnson & Johnson's baby powder, shower to shower, have a 30 to 60% increased risk of ovarian cancer. for baby powder. Okay, and they've known it. They've known about these studies for 40 years. It's remarkable to me that a product that you can go into the Kmart, pull off the shelves, and use on your children on has the ability to cause cancer, and there's not even a statement on the label that says, "Do not use it for personal hygiene."
Wow. And so we're waiting on those cases that have been that are in that
federal court now. Federal court. And we're waiting. Candidly, what we're waiting for is for Johnson & Johnson to acknowledge that there is a problem, and there has been a problem for 40 years. And instead, what they're doing is they're using their platform to suggest, you know, maybe there was something wrong with the test. Maybe there was something. Maybe there was cross contamination in the lab. The
right.
kinds of things you typically see. What I'm waiting for them to do is to step up and tell women what the Canadian FDA has suggested. Do not use it for personal hygiene. You know, there's no reason why even there should be a question about the safety of something as ubiquitous as
right.
baby powder.
Chris, TC, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
I should say that Chris and I have spent a considerable amount of time debating politics over the past couple of nights. Chris, thanks again. I appreciate it. Thanks. Folks, we're going to get to some more interviews in just a moment. But for folks who own a dog, it's very often the most beloved member of your family. I think in some instances, people like their dogs better than they like the other people in their family. But do you have one that's rescued? Do you wonder about what breed it is? Sometimes it's fun to have a dog you don't know anything about. But at other times, you can learn a lot about your dog, not just for fun, but also for the dog's health. The Embark Dog DNA test is the best-in-class dog DNA test. Kelly used it for Edie, and this is what she told me. She said, I received Edie's results from Embark. There's so much information about her. She tested clear for all 171 genetic health conditions they screen for. She's not a carrier or at risk for any of the genetic diseases they test for. There's also a full clinical trait report. So much great news, but more importantly, I can provide the report to her vet, which will provide so much information to help Edie's health as she grows up. If you've listened in the past, you may have heard me mention the story of Gregor, who apparently is it's a dog of a listener, and the dog has been a huge help therapeutically for a member of the family who had trouble with socialization. And when they were able to find out about, use Embark to find the DNA of their dog, Gregor, then their vet changed the dog's diet and also was able to tell them what possible diseases to look out for. Embark's test is worth it because it's the most comprehensive kit on the market. It's developed by doctors and veterinarians. It tests for over 250 breeds and over 170 genetic health conditions. Apparently, competitors go down to only 12% of a breed's mixed detection. Embark's DNA test kit is accurate to a 5% breed component in a mixed breed dog's ancestry. This test will catch the breed's nuances that makes your dog so special. And Embark has an exclusive offer for our listeners. Go to EmbarkVet.com. Use the promo code MAJORITY to save 15% off your dog DNA test kit. That's EmbarkVet.com, the promo code MAJORITY. All right, joining me now from Levin Papantonio, Matt Schultz is with me. And Matt, when I heard about what you're working on, I was particularly interested because I have a 14-year-old daughter.
Right.
And so, I don't want to get to the specifics, but she had a little run-in with vaping at one point with Juuls and this and that. But I have to say, the one upshot of the enormous amount of social media that she is involved with is that she is very, very aware that there are problems with vaping that range, I guess, across the spectrum. So just tell us, I mean, where does Juul fit in? I mean, because I've heard of, like, people dying. That's not directly a function of the Juul. Like, where... Tell sure. me the landscape of the whole vape
Yeah, well, let me start at the beginning. I have two daughters myself, one of whom I'm about to pick up at the airport and take up to Zion to do some hiking with. She's 22. Her sister's 20. So step back 5 years, 2014, 2015, pre-Juul world. They're in high school. None of their friends smoke. They don't smoke. They have one kid in their class who smokes cigarettes. They complain about how he stinks all the time because he smokes cigarettes.
Teen smoking rates have plummeted.
They were at the lowest probably since the 1920s. A lot of success, and a lot of that due to litigation against the tobacco industry, which made them come clean. The documents came out. There was no more denial, no more confusion over the issue. And so we had a generation or two of kids who grew up with that knowledge, and they were down to about 9%.
And let me just also say, you're obviously aware of this, but the Levin Papantonio firm, I mean, Levin was
absolutely
instrumental in forging the AG settlement in Florida, which became a sort of a nationwide
model.
Yeah,
right,
model
for the AG settlement, the master settlement agreement. And so I've been doing cigarette litigation in Florida since my kids were small. So they got a dad growing up suing the tobacco industry, trying cases against cigarette companies. They don't smoke. Their friends don't smoke. You can stand in 2014 and look forward and think, you know, when my daughters have daughters, cigarettes are done in America. Nicotine is done because, of course, that's all a cigarette is a way to get nicotine. And that's where we were. And then Juul came on the scene. And Juul took a page from Big Tobacco's playbook, the youth marketing piece.
Tell folks what Juul is, because I mean, I wouldn't have a clue, I don't think, if I didn't have
right, electronic vaping device, essentially. You have a liquid solution, propylene glycol, that's infused with nicotine. They put it on a heating element. It vaporizes it, turns it into an aerosol. Looks like smoke. It's not smoke, but it's laden with nicotine. Juul was different. E-cigs have been around since about 2007.
Right.
Were not very prevalent among youth or adults, for that matter. And a lot of the public health community liked the idea of e-cigarettes because they figured they had to be safer than smoking cigarettes.
Right.
But Juul was different. And Juul was different because most nicotine in its free state is alkaline. And it's a freebase. And so most e-cigs were freebasing the way the cigarette industry freebased nicotine way back in the 70s. That was the secret soul of Marlboro, as I think Laura Lard called it. Juul did it differently. What they did was add benzoic acid to the mix that reduces the pH. It makes it an acidic aerosol. No real throat hit, very smooth. You, unlike a pack of cigarettes, you can't oversmoke it. In other words, you can just hit this thing constantly. They misled people about the amount of nicotine in it. A Juul pod, and this is not lawyers talking, these are people who've done the science on it, contains roughly 36, 38, maybe 40 cigarettes worth of nicotine. So imagine now you have a pack of cigarettes, which a Philip Morris scientist one time called a nicotine delivery device. It is a package of nicotine. A 14-year-old kid, a 12-year-old kid for that matter, cannot smoke two packs of Marlboro in a day.
Right, because it's just like physically...
Precisely.
It will physically exhaust you in some way,
exactly.
Right? I mean, that's... at one point, you know, I guess the analogy would be if you could drink three bottles worth of vodka with, it, you know... For most people, by the time you get to the second bottle, you're unconscious.
Right.
But in this instance, it's the all of the physical effects that come with smoking are not involved in Juul, but you get the amount of nicotine that you would.
Right, and you can get even more, which I think is why we see a lot of these seizure and stroke, and I don't know of any of those necessarily being related to Juul, but of course, with Juul's meteoric success, there have been a lot of copycats, and so there's a lot of acidic, low-acid, benzoic-based, nicotine salt-based e-cigarettes out there that kids can hit time after time after time, which they couldn't have done with cigarettes 40 years ago or 50 years ago. So nicotine toxicity is a very real concern. The bigger concern, of course, is, as I mentioned before, we were about to have a generation free of nicotine. Instead, we have now, in the words of the CDC, undone all the work of the last 30 years on that, and we now have the highest nicotine use rates that we've probably ever seen among kids.
Wow. And so what are... I mean, do you have a sense of what the health implications are of this? I mean, my understanding always was the real problem with smoking is not necessarily the nicotine. Like, you get a nicotine patch and, you know, people want to get off it at one point, but theoretically there was no health implications to it. Are there known health implications for ingesting that much nicotine? I mean, aside for it being obviously highly addictive, what are the direct health impacts?
Sure. Well, with nicotine per se, there's some modest cardiovascular risk. I think it would be such that any doctor in good faith could tell someone, look, if you're smoking cigarettes and there are no long-term health implications aside from addiction, which you already have to nicotine, you definitely should switch to e-cigarettes because the modest cardiovascular risk would outweigh all the,
right.
the risks of cancer, emphysema, et cetera, with cigarettes. There is some notion that nicotine can, it's kind of complex science, but essentially can promote cancer within the body, but again, a very modest risk compared to the risks of combustion cigarettes overall. What we are seeing lately, however, is some literature in animals, kind of like we saw with cigarettes in the early 1950s, that there may in fact be some cancer risks with e-cigarettes themselves, and they seem to be different risks than those that are posed by combustion cigarettes. I think it's going to be a long time before we know. It's going to take a generation of people getting sick just like it did with cigarettes. You know, it's funny, one of our experts that we put on at trial, often a historian on the marketing and science of tobacco, tells a story of Dr. Ochsner, back in the 1920s, calling all of his medical students out of bed at night because they had a lung cancer case. And he said, you'll probably never see another one of these in your lifetime. It was such a rare occurrence that it was that notable. And of course, cigarettes then came on the scene and we had an epidemic and have an epidemic of lung cancer and many other cancers. Are we going to see that with e-cigarettes? We know there are acute risks. We've seen the news over that. Now, it's going to take a long time to tell.
Okay. Tell us about the acute risks and put them in context with what we know about Juul.
Yeah, well, it's difficult because we don't know. No one has done a proper study of, well, how many of these folks who've been having seizures or strokes or lung collapse or these pneumonia-type diseases, the deaths, are these people who are vaping Juul and only Juul? Are they vaping, you know, black market stuff? Are they vaping cannabis?
Right, I feel like there has been a lot of confusion. I don't know how deliberate, frankly.
Right.
About what was the but for in whatever they were vaping? Was it tainted nicotine packs or THC packs, you know, the black market ones, or was it other people? Is there a consensus at this point? Because there have been quite a few deaths, right?
Right.
How many? Do you know how many deaths?
I think 19, maybe this point, and about 3,000 illnesses documented. And part of this phenomenon probably has to do with the awareness around it. So this may have been happening for a long time, but if you don't know how to look for it, then you're not going to see it, right?
So we really don't know at this point what has, in all those cases, what has made people ill, what has made people die, and is there? I guess the point is one would think that we would learn the lesson of cigarettes, which is if you have a product that people are ingesting, you should make sure that it's safe first, right?
Right.
I mean, is that basically, I mean...
Right. And there's been a lot of criticism over FDA on the e-cig issue. Of course, they've been overwhelmed with the Tobacco Control Act coming in since 2009 with just new applications for cigarette products. And one of the unfortunate benefits of this crisis is FDA is now, you know, in hyper motion on this. And we're going to see regulation coming, I think, maybe a little late for a lot of kids. Because the big picture to this, Sam, is... despite the acute illnesses, what we now have is a generation of kids addicted to nicotine. And it's funny, when I do tobacco trials, we have to call in 190 jurors to get six, because in the box at the end of the day, because people's opinions are so strong around personal responsibility, because tobacco has touched everybody's life in some way, mostly negative, of course. But then on the other side, a lot of people who feel like, you know, it's free country. If you want to smoke yourself to death, then don't go around suing people when you die, okay?
Right.
But then we go through 2 and 3 week trials, and we've won far more cases than we've lost, and over $1 billion of verdicts across Florida in the last 7 years on this. I think we're going to see this when we get to the bottom of what happened with Juul, because it's no secret they took their marketing page from Big Tobacco, and what they did, and I think this is undeniable at this point, of course they will deny it, and that's why we have lawsuits, is a preconceived plan to addict kids to something that will ultimately make many of them sick and possibly kill them, and leave them in it with all the problems that all addictions bring later in life, and perhaps leading even to the use of combustion cigarettes down the road if e-cigarettes become heavily regulated. So we've got a nightmare of addiction among our kids, and parents had no idea, and that, you know, was not an accident. The design of Juul, it looks like a thumb drive. It is a stealth device.
Right.
It was designed so that it could be used
flavors,
in secret.
Right?
Oh, of course.
It's all flavored.
Yeah, so they want to say now this is for, you know, the veteran Marlboro Camel smoker, so they can have a safer way to get their nicotine. We're helping. Well, then why creme brulee? Why advertising through Instagram with young models? Clearly,
right,
they were targeting
kids. There's no strawberry-flavored Camel
cigarettes. And for that matter, well, they tried that, of course, because make no mistake, the cigarette industry would... And, of course, Altria, who owns Philip Morris, has 30-some-odd percent of Juul, so they're behind this as well.
Right.
The cigarette industry would still love to get kids smoking. It's just not feasible in this day and age. With Juul, it has become not only feasible but realized. But, yes, the 30-year Marlboro smoker who knows he or she is going to be sick one day and wants to quit but compulsively smokes because nicotine is so powerfully addictive does not need creme brulee. Nor do they go to Instagram to get their advertising for their next nicotine hit. These guys went after kids and they got them.
And so there's no cases at this point, right? I mean, like, what do you as an attorney, as a trial lawyer who is, you know, sort of obviously having gone through the work you've done in terms of tobacco, you're obviously incredibly sensitive to these issues and
right.
the implications of them because you've worked with. I don't know how many plaintiffs who, got hopelessly addicted to cigarettes and
right.
they killed themselves with it.
Mostly widows of people who are hopelessly addicted.
And so, I mean, give me a sense of, like, you're seeing this going on there. You start to do research on it, and then what are you doing? Just waiting for the test, or, I mean, like, what capacity as a lawyer do you work in this at this point?
Well, that's it's interesting, all three, because there is a set of cases. There have been several cases filed, class actions mostly, and I co-chair the class department at Levin Papantonio, so that was our interest. Given our history in tobacco, the current litigation I do, we represent the province of Alberta, Canada, and their healthcare recovery litigation. When we saw that Juul was essentially recreating this model, we got interested. Other firms got interested. Class actions got filed, mainly around deceptive marketing over the amount of nicotine that Juul delivers and the fact that they very blatantly targeted kids in this campaign.
We should say, the only reason why you do that is because you want to really, really addict
Precisely.
Kids, right? Like, they put in 40 40 cigarettes worth of nicotine in these small devices is you, I mean, it's not like
making them,
it doesn't save any money.
Right.
It doesn't enhance the taste. It's right. just literally like, we're selling you more of this highly, highly addictive drug, and you don't even know it. I mean, on some level, it has hopefully with not nearly the potential for the horror that it's been, but that's like almost like the OxyContin story, right? Like,
that's
this
right.
is non-addictive, but it turns out to be horribly addictive on some level, even if you were aware, like, oh, I know there's nicotine in here and it's addictive. You just don't know how much nicotine relative to would be if you sat down to smoke a couple cigarettes.
A recent study showed 63% of kids didn't even know Juul had nicotine in it. You know, look, when you look at Juul's marketing, hashtag vaporized, this is hip, it's cool, it's the new cigarette, it's the rebellion, it's the way to you know, separate, identify yourself as distinct from authority, from your parents, just like it was with kids and is to some extent today. But these guys design a device that delivers supremely high amounts of nicotine in a way that can be used over and over and over, in a way that can be used stealthily, and then target their advertising to youth through hashtag marketing, through use of these club parties and whatnot, through use of, you know, Katy Perry for that matter. It is sinister, and it is the worst of what we see in industry. So these lawsuits came about, and where we're at right now is we essentially have three types of suits. We've got injury suits, lung injuries, the seizures, strokes, that sort of thing. We have lawsuits for injury for addiction itself, which is, of course, a lifelong injury. It's not a broken leg that heals in a year. We've got a set of opioid-style cases, school districts now bringing claims because they're having to hire security guards, put in surveillance, hire people to help kids and tutor them because of their nicotine addiction. And these are taxpayer expenses that we're bearing because of this sinister campaign that Juul carried out.
Theoretically, you can't sell a Juul to anyone under the age of 18, can you, or...?
In theory, sure. In theory, okay. You can't sell a cigarette to anyone under 18,
but
we all know how that goes. And there's a third track of class actions, which is kind of where this began, for the deceptive marketing over the amount of nicotine, the targeting of kids, et cetera, and addicting them. And all of those cases in federal court have been consolidated in what's called multi-district litigation. So in mass torts, generally, if you have, you know, a drug that harms thousands of people and thousands of lawsuits are filed, the federal courts will consolidate them all in front of one judge. And we have done that. I think there are 39 cases right now in front of Judge William Orrick in San Francisco, which is where Juul is based. And he is just beginning to get a handle on the case. He'll be appointing leadership over this multi-district litigation following a hearing November 8th. And then the books get opened and we get in and see everything on the inside that they did to make this happen and bring this about.
And then in the meantime, hopefully there are studies that are being done. But, I mean, who would pay? That's part of the problem, isn't there? Is it just sort of like, who's going to pay for the studies? Like, who's incentivized to find out whether the ingredients that Juul puts into their vaporizer to make it smoother or whatever other chemicals I imagine are in that mix,
right?
Or just the idea of, like, what are the impact of that much nicotine on, you know, I imagine there's some neurological, you know, I mean, it's not just a question of addiction. I would imagine at one point, like, it's going to have neurological implications, you
sure.
know, because you're talking about kids in particular. Who, there's nobody, like, is there anybody incentivized to actually do that study? I mean, does anybody just, you know, maybe at a university somebody
well,
says,
yeah,
like,
precisely.
This is a project?
Fortunately, you know, the federal government gives lots of grants for just like they do for, say, breast cancer research. There is a lot of federal money out there for people to study things like this, and we already have a very robust public health network, a community of people, many of whom you know, give their time serving in litigation to testify about what they've learned over the years that was dedicated to smoking, nicotine addiction specifically, and those same folks are studying e-cigarettes now because it is the epidemic that smoking was 100 years ago.
And we should say, I mean, that is just another example of these companies privatizing their profits,
externalizing,
socializing the cost.
Precisely.
And, you know, that you wouldn't have to do with a lot of other products. Like, I mean, you know, we can tell, like, I know this pen is not, you know, we don't need any studies. They
right.
can sell these pens, and society does not have to go out and pick up the cost of making sure that it's not going to, you know, kill me in 20 years or horribly, you know, addict me or whatever, get me addicted or whatever it is. So, yeah, that's...
Well, and it's, you know, we're fortunate that we have...
you would think after the tobacco thing,
right.
right? Like, that you there would be a statute that just simply says, like, we're going to have a different class of... We have a different class of substances, and we're going to require proof that this is healthy or is not...
Or not as bad as not,
right.
the alternative.
Right.
And I predict we will see FDA taking action perhaps by this time next year, one would hope. And I predict we will see something like you can't have 5% nicotine, which Juul has, and except by prescription. You can't sell creme brulee. If this really is a device that helps people quit smoking, perhaps it does have a role to play, but you can't go after kids.
Right. And I've noticed, I think, in New York, I don't know if it's the city or the state off the top of my head, but I've heard ads, there is a push to basically outlaw flavored vaporizers.
Right. Several states, Michigan has had a ban, Massachusetts, San Francisco, and I think we'll see more of that. It's one reason the federal government needs to get a handle on it, because this has split the public health community in a sense. I mean, there are experts I've put on at trial who don't want to serve as experts against Juul, because even though they recognize how inappropriate the marketing was, they do believe there is a role for e-cigarettes
right.
in helping people get off of combustion cigarettes. It may be 20 years before we know whether they are worse in some ways than cigarettes, but logically, when you look at what's in the smoke aerosol from a combustion cigarette versus an e-cigarette, it would seem that they must be safer.
Right.
So a lot of the public health community feels they have a role. They don't want to see outright bans. What happens when a generation of kids who are now hopelessly nicotine addicted are told you don't get e-cigarettes? Where do they go then
right,
for the nicotine?
Right.
So it's a complex question. But
wow.
At the end of the day, what we want, aside from compensation for people who've been harmed financially and physically, is a sort of prospective relief, kind of like the opioid case. You guys broke this. You need to, instead of externalizing the cost to all the people listening to this, to you and to me, take some of the profit that you've reaped from this and do some good and try and help these kids get off of nicotine.
Lastly, Matt, let me ask you this. Like, because this question that comes up almost certainly every time I'm here. Have you ever like had the opportunity to explore what the people working at this company who know that they're putting out this product that has this enormous amount of nicotine, they're flavoring it as creme brulee or, you know, strawberry patch or whatever it is. They know they're marketing it to kids, right? I mean, you'd have to be a complete idiot to not know that. And there has to be somebody in that company who's not a complete idiot. Like, what do they just don't care? Like, I just don't understand, like, how someone goes to work every day with this knowledge and then they just head home? Or is it just a function of, like, the quality of the car that they're driving?
It's an interesting question. I've seen two types in the cigarette industry, both through reviewing tens of thousands of documents and through taking tons of depositions of vice presidents at Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds and Laura Lard and Liggett and crossing them at trial. Type number one, and I suspect we will see and will prove the founders of Juul are of this type, which are, I want, you know, my Maserati, I want my castle on the hill, and if somebody has to get hurt, then so be it. And those are the worst of the barons that we've seen throughout, you know, right, our history. And then I think there are a lot of people who can't live in a constant state of cognitive dissonance, so they rationalize what they do. Well, look, these things really are safer than cigarettes. And sure, some kids may have gotten addicted, and that's unfortunate, but look at all the good we're doing. At the end of the day, the ledger is really falls on my side. I'm a good guy. I'm a good woman. People can't, the average person can't live a life of just acknowledging they are pure evil. I've met some people who really have no problem with that, and it's frightening.
Wow. Matt Schultz, Levin Papantonio, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks,
Sam. I really appreciate it.
Wowza.
That story, not specifically the Juul story, but that story of the sociopaths in these organizations that I still, it's just, I just have trouble wrapping my head around that.
Wes?
We got one more guest. And we stick around. We're going to be talking about, obviously, the latest in terms of the impeachment and whatnot in a moment. I am joined now by Wes Bowden. Wes, you're an attorney at Levin Papantonio, right?
Yes, that's right.
And you're working on a case that came out of the C8 case. Is that right?
Yeah, it's kind of the genesis of it. Was C8, as some of your viewers may know, was a contaminant that was found throughout the Mid-Ohio Valley. And it was a chemical that was used in making Teflon. It was kind of, it was just excreted into the water through the smokestacks, and it really poisoned about 70,000 people. We started looking at that litigation. We realized that,
and we should say that this was DuPont, right?
Yeah, it was DuPont. That's
and,
right.
And the chemical C8 was made by 3M for a while, and then 3M realized, like, this is just so toxic, we don't want anyone to be in this business.
Yeah.
Because you got to burn this stuff off, and it has no half-life. Well, but it's an extremely long half-life.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So DuPont said, well, we'll just manufacture our own. And instead of burning it, they just dumped it into river because, you know, easier,
yeah,
I guess. And who's going to notice until, I guess, about 25 years ago, a farmer, his cows were dying, and that started the whole thing rolling.
That's right.
So over the course of that litigation, which at least, you know, I guess ended in a massive did they end up settling after the first couple of cases?
So we tried three of them. During the fourth case, they settled, and they ended up paying that community that poisoned. So about 3,500 cases settled for a very large sum.
Right. Okay. And so out of that case, you came across this new chemical? What?
Right. So in the course of discovery and looking at the information in that case, we realized there is a kind of a sister chemical, if you will, called PFOS. Very structurally similar, still an 8-carbon chain. And what's unique about these chemicals is they have fluorine bonds instead of hydrogen. And that's important chemistry-wise because those bonds are really hard to break. And as you were saying, they just never break down naturally in the environment. So when we saw that, we realized that these chemicals were showing up everywhere in the country, and they're showing up at specific sites, predominantly around Department of Defense, you know, Navy, Air Force bases, where they're using firefighting foams.
So now, how did you find, and we should say that all of us in this room probably have some C8 in our system at
this
point.
We do, yeah.
Right? I mean, which is nuts. It is, and that's because it travels. It just keeps traveling because it never breaks down.
Right.
It's never sort of absorbed in a way. It just lingers everywhere. So we all have it in our systems at this point. It's just a question of, like, you know, what levels it becomes toxic. So how do you find out when you see this other chemical that exists, mm-hmm, that has a similar structure? So you know that at the very least, it's one that lingers around. And that's not good for human beings. How do you know that it was located in these different areas?
So that's a great question. So it's fascinating, the story of this. Only a couple years ago did our government start looking into this. And so what happened was, in In 2016, the EPA came out with a guideline, not a standard, but just a guideline, saying that this chemical in amounts in excess of 70 parts per trillion, which is about a drop in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. That small amount of chemical can cause health effects, adverse health effects. So the EPA said, we're going to come up with a guideline right now, and they're working on coming up with a standard, which hopefully would be much lower. But if you exceed this guideline, it's time to start taking actions. So when the Department of Defense realized this, they said, oh my gosh, we've been using this chemical at every Air Force base, at every Navy base, at every firefighting training facility, and they started doing tests. And so what they did was they made a list, literally made a list, saying, where do we think we're going to find this? Started going through the list, and they found it everywhere, not at 70 parts per trillion, but at 9,000 parts per trillion, 10,000 parts per trillion. So they started testing people's water around these military sites. And what they've done, to their credit, although it's been delayed and it's been slow in getting there, they've started giving these communities their own bottled water. As we're talking today, there are communities throughout our country where the U.S. Navy is delivering on a weekly basis bottled water because they don't believe their water is safe to drink. And those are only the places that they've tested. So we've tested, as a country, we've only tested 3% of the water supply, just 3%. And out of that 3%, we estimate that more than 6 million people are exposed to this chemical. And so it's a big problem. It's just the tip of the iceberg.
So who made this chemical?
Historically, 3M made it. So they developed it back in the 1950s, and they started promoting it in products in the 1960s and 1970s. In around 1999, 2000, 3M started getting pressure, largely because of the tenant lawsuit. They realized that this was going to be, the veil was being pulled back and they were going to be exposed.
Largely because of the C8 case.
Yes, exactly.
They started getting wind that, like, oh boy.
Right, so they pulled out and DuPont said, we don't care, full steam ahead for us. So then DuPont started making some of these chemicals, and there's a large group of chemicals that have these properties.
But what's wrong with the people at DuPont? Like, they just see, like, oh, this stuff is too dangerous for you to make?
I think that's
our business plan.
I think that hits the nail on the head right there. That's their business plan.
I was being facetious.
It's someone in that company sat down and looked at what is it going to cost us to resolve our litigation versus what is it going to cost us to change our behavior. This has already come out in trial. I used it in one of my trials.
Right.
They realized in the mid-1980s that they could incinerate this chemical instead of just dumping it into the river, instead of just dumping it into the smokestack. You know what their number was? They did an accounting. 15 cents per pound, $1 million a year, on a company that was grossing, just in this one department alone, $100 million in net profit. It was over $1 billion gross revenue. So for 15 cents, they're willing to poison people.
And they just assumed, like, either we'll get away with it,
right?
Or if we have to pay damages, it'll be less than 15 cents per pound, essentially.
Yeah.
Or I'm a CEO right now, and I probably won't be here in 15 years.
That's a large part of it, too. So when we look at these litigations that occur over and over again, we think to ourselves, how can these companies continue on this course of conduct? Ask yourself, how many of these executives are going to jail? You just never see those headlines.
Right.
Wall Street doesn't care. The stock might dip briefly, but it always rebounds. These executives, they say, oh, well, that was in the past. We've changed our conduct. It's because there's a delay. They're just very good at the cover-up. It took us 40 years to figure out what was wrong with this community. And now, they've paid a settlement. The settlement was $670 million. During that time period, they made billions in profit, billions
right.
for their shareholders. So, until there's a way that we can actually hold people in executive positions accountable and, actually change legislatively and hold them criminally accountable, even the company, I don't know that we're going to be able to really change the course of conduct of these companies.
Okay, I didn't mean to sidetrack the story, but, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, this, I mean, I feel like the work that the attorneys do here change specific conduct.
Yeah.
And in some instances has a more lasting impact, but it's almost like a little bit of a whack-a-mole type of situation.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so this chemical, DuPont sees that, 3M's too afraid of this. That's where we make our money, because our business model is that we do, the stuff that non-sociopaths won't do because there's a market in it. And they start making the chemical, and then they must know at that point, right? Because, 3M is obviously it's profitable for 3M, at least to some extent, right?
Right, right.
And so they must know that there's a problem, like almost inherently. Is that almost like prima facie evidence that they...
We had a document written in 1982 from their in-house counsel saying we have been liable for the past 32 years of operation. And this is their attorney saying what you're doing is wrong. Internally, their head of medical, their head medical director said this is a known animal carcinogen, and we believe that it is a probable human carcinogen. So this isn't science waiting to develop today.
Right.
This is a company saying we know this, but we're not going to tell regulators, and we'll deal with it when someone files suit. There's literally a document that we used in one of our trials where their head epidemiologist, a person who's in charge of looking at health effects in large populations, said we have a cancer problem, a human cancer problem at our work site. Do we want to do the study? And the note at the bottom of the memo is, I quote this, wait to do the study until we are sued. That's the mentality this company takes when it comes to people.
So now, my understanding is DuPont is out of business, or...
As a shell game.
Right,
so.
Okay. So yeah, tell me that shell game.
So what happened was in the, I guess the 2010s, DuPont spun off its fluoropolymers department into Chemours. And they loaded up Chemours with debt. They made Chemours pay them a bunch of money as a dividend. And they were basically just trying to set this company up, in my opinion, to fail. And they had an agreement in place to make it to where Chemours was going to pay all of these claims, a way to further limit their liability.
So they create an arm's length entity.
Right.
That is basically just kicking money back to them, but owns all the liability for the product. And so it's like, well, it's not us. It's this Chemours guys over here.
And so,
oh, they don't have many assets. Oh, so, you're in trouble. Because they're just a P.O. box.
Right. So they loaded them up with probably $400 million in assets and an equal amount of debt. And what's really interesting right now, once they spin it off, Chemours is now its own legal entity under the law. Well, what has Chemours done? They turned around and sued DuPont, saying this was a fraudulent transfer. That case is now pending in Delaware, and it's not a sealed...
Oh, so the executives at Chemours are like, what do we do with this?
Yeah.
And they...
What DuPont, they're saying what DuPont did was wrong, and it shouldn't be our responsibility to fix their mistake. And so that's playing out in the courts right now.
Interesting. And so do you have cases, or are these cases waiting for the resolution of the relationship between these two companies?
No, we have cases that are ongoing. We have personal injury cases from the community that was affected directly by DuPont's Teflon manufacturing plant. And then we also have now cases that are being brought on behalf of states, governments, and cities that have their own natural resource damages claims, saying this chemical shouldn't be here.
And we're talking about the PF...
The AFFF litigation.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's PFAS generally. There's a lot of different terms, easy to confuse, but all the same class of chemicals. Same two companies at play, the same two major manufacturers being DuPont and 3M. So they're facing a lot of liability.
And it sounds like we don't know even the half of it in terms of where this chemical is and what other communities are impacted by it.
That's right. I mean, not even the half. I mean, we know 3% so far. I mean, that's all the testing that's been done. There are additional government funds being set aside to do testing. The EPA actually encourages, it's called an unregulated contaminant, still unregulated. Despite all we know now, it's still unregulated because the EPA hasn't set a standard. But now many water supplies are starting to look for this chemical, and it's coming out on a weekly basis. California just 2 weeks ago lowered their level that's allowed in their water and found an additional 300 communities that have been infected.
Oh, geez.
And these are the states that are taking action now. Michigan is a little bit ahead of the curve because they've started doing testing, California as well. But you're going to find it all throughout the country. So far, they've identified about 600 sites, and they're looking for more.
And is this chemical just used exclusively in terms of like fighting fire?
No, it's not. It's in fact, you and I have it in our blood right now through just regular consumer items. Stain-resistant carpets. If you've ever eaten a fast food chain, the hamburger wrappers, the soda cups are lined with these chemicals to help keep water from clinging to them. And so the odd thing, the really scary thing, is that you and I, as we sit here having this conversation, we have about 2,000 parts per trillion in our blood. So if our blood was water, it would not be safe for us to drink it. I mean, that's how bad this chemical is. It's just, it's in every living organism in our country.
And there's no way to expel it, is there?
No, you have to just wait. The half-life of these chemicals is just 2,000 today.
I'm talking like there's no way of expelling it in a mortal human
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No, you have to just wait it out. So our bodies will get rid of it in about 5 years. Half of it will be out of our body. So 5 years from now, if we're having the same conversation, we'll have 1,000 in us.
But that's presuming going out eating hamburger or wherever. I mean, is there a website where I can go and see, like, the different products that have this? Like, I mean, I don't have a stain-resistant carpet.
Right.
And part of it is because I was like, I'm not sure I know how they do that, and I don't know if I want to know, right? Like,
so there are – so the EPA website for PFAS chemicals, PFAS, they list a lot of the consumer products that historically had it.
PFAS.
Right. So that's the kind of the global family of chemicals. But as of 2016, our country has phased them out from manufacturing processes. But that's very recent.
Okay.
So you think about the persistence of these chemicals and how we're exposed to them. We're still going to be exposed to them for the foreseeable future.
Okay. So maybe we'll put a link to that EPA site back in Brooklyn. They'll put that on the – it's PAFAS. And all right. Well, I guess, you know, next time I'm here, you'll probably have an update on the progress of these cases. Wes, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
Wow. Jeez. It's great. Thank you. I think we're going to probably do a Freebie Friday. What do you guys think? Is anybody there?
On Freebie Thursday. Sorry, Freebie Thursday.
I can't hear you guys.
A freebie.
What's that?
A Freebie Thursday.
Oh, wait. Yeah, today's Thursday. Oh, yeah. Screw that. I didn't know. I forgot. All right. Well, then let's head to the fun half. We got a lot of stuff to cover today in terms of impeachment. Yes, the past couple of days have been stunning, frankly, in terms of what we're going to see on impeachment. I just want to say, I don't know, maybe I should reach out to Tim Pool. And have another debate and see if he's changed his mind about this. But
hey, actually,
I thought he agreed with you. On
I
everything.
Wanted to test something out.
No, well, he said he wasn't. He thought like it couldn't be extortion. Some people call it bribery. I think it's extortion, frankly. Regardless, bribery, extortion, more or less a similar dynamic. Bribery, incidentally. If you look in the Constitution, that's almost explicitly impeachable. But one of the things that he had said was the Ukrainians didn't know that Trump was leveraging this money. And my argument was that doesn't matter any more than it would matter if I knew that you were attempting to kill me. You can't. That's not a defense. I was trying to poison my husband, but he didn't know I was doing it. So it's not. It's not attempted murder.
That was happening.
No, I became aware of it. I was
going to say
it took a while.
I want to test.
You got to be careful
out.
Of sweet stuff because that's coolant. But the other thing, let me just finish the part.
Yeah, sorry.
So that story has fallen apart. The Ukrainians apparently did know that the funds were being withheld. But like I say, that's largely irrelevant. It's just a talking point that they can no longer address. And the idea that Donald Trump was genuinely concerned with the corruption of Ukraine.
I hate corruption.
I hate it.
It's
so
laughable
bad.
On its face.
So
but
bad.
There are people who don't have that reaction. And I want to respect. I want to show my respect for people who have a different idea of things than I do. So fine, you don't find it laughable on its face that Donald Trump would be against corruption, specifically in Ukraine. But it also turns out that the Trump administration has been looking to cut anti-corruption funds for Ukraine and around the world.
Yeah, until they get rid of the corruption.
Yeah, exactly.
Until, from day one of this administration. That story came out yesterday. And so now what we're witnessing is is Plan B by the Republicans. And we will talk about Plan B. And I And I've had this argument with the first guest what we had on today and a number of other lawyers. I am of the mind that there's a plan C. And I will present my theory about that in the fun half. Before we do...
Wait, just for Tim Pool, are we going in the obvious direction, which would be like, you know, I don't want to be a dick, but you're like Thanos. Or, you know, that's a utilitarian perspective, and that's usually the bad guy in movies, Sam.
Yeah, it's Bill.
I think it's Bill, right?
Yeah, Bill would be a total Tim Pool.
With the little, with the chuckles. You know, I hate to bring it up, but you're sounding like Thanos.
Well, Tim Pool made a strong case against impeachment. How it's actually going to hurt the Democrats.
Yeah, you know, T, that's actually going to reverberate out on Democrats, but unless you listen to what Tulsi's saying about my wife.
But that's where he starts out, but by the end of, it really, depending on what the clicks, you know, what his monetization rate is, it could easily go into Mandela territory.
Right. Absolutely.
Let's just put it that way.
As of now, it should be like, I thought he had good points. I thought I had good points. We both said things.
Both said things. Both right about some things.
Both right about some things. Both, maybe he fact-checked me. Maybe I reminded him of the Avengers.
Incidentally, I have had the opportunity to be in contact with people who, and you know, you always have the, are they ignorant or is it a grift type of debate with people? And I am, it's on the grift side. Yeah. I mean, but it also, there's something beautiful about it that I've like come to understand. We'll talk more about it in the fun half, but.
Maybe off mic.
Huh?
Maybe off mic.
Yeah. Well, or maybe not. folks, knowing your dog's breed mix can help you provide a better quality of life. Like I said, Kelly's doing it with Edie. Your listeners are doing it with Gregor. And the Embark Dog DNA Test is the best-in-class dog DNA test. Developed by doctors and veterinarians, Embark tests for over 250 breeds and 170 genetic health conditions, so that you can make sure that you're feeding your dog what's going to keep them healthy. You're watching out for specific diseases they might be predisposed to. It's the only research-grade dog DNA test kit on the market. Save 15% on a dog DNA test. Go to EmbarkVet.com, EmbarkVet, EmbarkVet.com. Use the promo code MAJORITY. Just a reminder, this show relies on your support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you get the fun half, you get the first half commercial free, and you just get the ability to go and walk around and just say, like, I'm a member of the Majority Report. And if you say that long enough, in as many places as you can, you will run into another member or listener of the show. For some reason, I've been out here, I've gotten recognized by a ton of people, and that doesn't generally happen to me. I don't know what that is.
It happens at tort conferences and Bernie rallies.
Well, when I got here yesterday, you know how I was having a problem with the internet?
Mm-hmm.
And the drop wasn't here. The Ethernet drop was not here. And I'm trying to maintain... I think everybody there knows that sometimes I get a little bit...
What a self-astute, self-aware use of language right here. I like that. Thank you.
Right, no. I mean, it's no secret that I get, you know, in circumstances where there have been failures of others that will implicate the quality or the ability to do the show, that I get a little hot under the collar about it.
A little bit.
And so we're waiting for the representative of the guy of the place to come down, and he comes down, and you know he looks like a deer in the headlight, and I actually had a sense of calm over me because of it in some way. I couldn't tell what it was, and I'm just like, okay, we need the internet, and so he comes back later and he goes, listen, I'm really sorry about this. We're going to get it done. I promise you. I'm actually, the reason why I was a little bit off put one you can't is I'm a big fan of the show, and I was planning to watch this later today.
Wow.
And I was like, all right, yeah, don't worry about it. He was a very nice guy, and true to form, by 11:59 East Coast time, literally at 11:59 East Coast time, we had that internet drop, and so we were able to do the show. So become a member.
Fantastic.
Join themajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget, get the Majority app. And you can now listen to AM Quickie on there. You can go to amquickie.com to sign up. If you want to subscribe to, get it, it's free, totally free. This is a free service. 5 minutes a day, every morning, give you the headline news. Lucy's been holding down the fort this week because I can't do it at 4:30 in the morning here. So check that out. And also, don't forget, if there's stuff that you don't understand that we talk about on the show that are clearly supposed to be funny or is like an inside joke, I'm not saying they're necessarily funny, but they're inside joke, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com with the subject line memes. You don't email us to ask. We got a bunch. I must have misphrased this the other day because we got a bunch of emails saying like, oh, yeah, no, send me the document with all this stuff on it. And I'm like, no, we don't. We're building a document that we're going to put on the website. But we need your input as to what you don't get because we don't know what you don't get. Michael, what happened last Tuesday in the office?
Well, let me just say, I talked about, we covered Chile, Lebanon, had on Artesia and John Iderola. I want to just also say David Feldman called in, and he just, the frame of the interview is that he's an elder statesman of the Bernie Bro movement, and he just ambushed me with his sort of liberal wankery. Even though he kept telling me he was an old lefty from way back. That was a very funny exchange. If people like Feldman's humor, which I do a lot.
You thought Bernie was too much of a junior senator.
Yeah, junior senator. He said, I'm just not sure the country's ready for an obnoxious, loudmouth junior senator from Vermont. And then he... And I'll also just say, I mean, next Tuesday, Shama Sawant's going to be on among several other guests. And I just kind of want to plug that if people can help her elections in the next couple of weeks, and Amazon's putting about $1 million into city council races to try to reverse the tide in Seattle. And for patrons, there's two brand new interviews, one with Adolph Reed, which is available now. We'll run it later. And another one we'll put up for patrons first as well with Zizek, both of which, were really fun and I think especially really important.
Jamie?
Jamie's not here today, but check out the Antifada.
Okay.
And Literary Hangover, I'm going to be doing, me and Alex, Alex returns for Salem Witch Trials. We're going to get deep into the politics of that, so look forward to that.
All right, folks, quick break. Fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a man.
And the alpha males are back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danarchy's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danarchy.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck. Reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
almost says what? Almost says what?
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on!
Fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black.
Blast blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy. Total, pussy, total, pussy, total. Pussy, 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 pussy.